Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio. Before we get started with this episode, I want to send out a huge thank you to a former guest, Robin Bartlett. He was on episode 342 a couple weeks ago from the time that this episode will air. And the episode was titled Vietnam Combat. And when we finished recording, he commented that he liked the background that I have here with all the flags and everything like that. And he wanted to send me a couple of flags to add to it. So over my left shoulder over here, you'll see the Vietnam Veterans of America and the 50th anniversary of the Vietnam War flags. He sent both of those, the yellow and blue ones over here. He sent both of those to me. So I want to thank Robin. Thank you very much for sending those to me. I think it kind of adds a little bit to the background. Also, he kind of motivated me to get my brother's honor and remember flag up here, which is that red and white one next to the other two that I just mentioned. And of course, we still have the six service flags for each branch of the military. But Robin, thank you so much for sending those flags. Definitely appreciate it. So anyways, let's get back into this episode. Today, my guest is William Yeske. William is a combat veteran who served 11 years in the United States Army. He is also the author of the book, Damn the Valley, based on his experiences while serving in Afghanistan in an area that earned the nickname the Meat Grinder. So we'll get into the book and his experiences in just a minute. But first, welcome to the show, William. I'm really glad to have you here.
Oh, no, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you bet. For the listeners who aren't familiar with you, maybe haven't heard from you and seen your book or anything like that, could you tell us a little bit about yourself, kind of your background, how you got into the military and things like that?
Oh, boy. Oh, that was, I mean, I took a little bit of a different path. You know, it was one of those, I was going to join up at 18, was talked out of it. Hey, let's maybe see if you'll go to college and go that route. And I was like, hey, you know what? That sounds pretty good. Let's head off to college, see what it's all about over there first. And worst case scenario, finish that up. And I'm like, I'll just go join up as an officer or something. And the college route didn't exactly go as planned. So kind of just ended up in this life experience in between to where I was, everything up to that point had been all about me. And at that point things were kind of stripping down and I made the decision to essentially jump out the door, I guess, if you want to go in 82nd terms. So I joined up on a special forces contract at 26, and it was sort of that reset button for me. And I sort of realized through it that, quite honestly, it's something that I think that my mind had said, hey, you need this discipline, you know, because that's really what happened in college there. I didn't have the discipline. I had the smarts. My grades were great. Mm-hmm. But I had gotten in trouble so many times, you know, on campus with the Wild Bill antics that they were like, hey, man, like you're not staying on campus anymore. My parents were like, yeah, I don't think we're funding this anymore. So, what's the failure to launch?
Yeah, there you go. For it.
And then they just did the kick out the door. So, I ended up, evaluating my options. I had been doing pretty good at that point, but I was involved in the racing world, but it just wasn't, there was no purpose behind it. You know, and in military was something that I always wanted to do. I had wanted to join the Marines actually at 18, taking the ASVAB and everything. And of course, like I said, I had gotten talked out of it. But, I had looked at the war in Afghanistan and said, hey, this is winding down. So let's read the writing on the wall. Let's base it towards the soft side and head over, you know, with the goal being towards special operations. So I went down on a contract with that. And, was that guy who came in to the recruiter and he was like, all right, you know, we took the test. He was like, all right, you can do anything. I'm like, no, I told you I wanted to do a special forces contract. And he, okay. but where and how I ended up with the 82nd, you know, I got hurt along the way, and they just ended up cutting Medhold out of nowhere. They just, man, I was not given the chance. And it was like part of 400 people just out of nowhere. I don't know how they ever let this many collect up in medical hold there. I mean, I know they were breaking people off, but that's, the numbers were insane.
Right.
So I found myself, you know, into the 82nd, right down the road, and headed to Afghanistan shortly thereafter. You know, it was, as they do, intensive training cycle into JRTC, and then out the door you go.
When things go sideways, will you be prepared? Some people are concerned they might have to go for a long time without electricity or even food. That's why I want to introduce you to 4patriots.com. Get preparedness products you can use now and that could save your life later. My favorite is 4Patriots' new solar generator, the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. It uses the endless free power of the sun to power lights, your TV, medical equipment, even run your fridge. Plus, it's expandable and comes with a free solar panel. Or pick up one of 4Patriots' best-selling survival food kits. Delicious tasting and designed to last for 25 years. They even have kits with real meat. And if the power's out, no worries. Just boil water over a fire, simmer, and serve. You'll enjoy a hot meal and stay safe in a crisis. More smart people than ever are finding 4Patriots. Over 2 million customers trust them. And you might have even seen them on TV. I had the folks at 4Patriots set up a special page for you at 4patriots.com/drive-on so that listeners of this podcast can see this week's discounts and deals before they go away. Go to 4patriots.com/drive-on, but hurry, these deals won't last long. Save more and get peace of mind now by going to 4patriots.com/drive-on. Awesome. You know, I think there's actually some similarities with your background and mine, okay. Where I went in, you know, took the ASVAB test and got a pretty good score on that. And I went in, I wanted to go infantry just straight off the bat. Like I that's what I wanted to do. I went to the recruiter. I said, sign me up as an infantryman. I got a pretty good score. And the guy who was like looking over the paperwork at MEPS, and he was like, infantry, you sure? Like that's what you want to do. Like you can do any, like pretty much anything that you want. Yeah. Any job, pick it. It's yours. I'm like, no, that's what I came here for, is infantry. Like you give me anything else, I don't want it. So
yeah, it's kind of, so, it's like that bread and butter. It's like everybody, the infantry is so varied like that. You know, there's just so many different, you'll find the ones to where really all they're good at is taking the shot, you right. know, but,
right.
but then you find the ones that are just like these adapters and thinkers and stuff. And it's kind of just this mesh of misfits, I guess, that are, you know, they really all just crushing together into something that works. It's just weird.
And, you know, the cool thing too is I was with a National Guard unit, and everybody there has their own civilian job, so they all have their own, outside of the infantry, we all were, you know, trained as infantrymen, but we also had other jobs like mechanics and you know, everything, you name it, we had it all. And so when like our trucks would break down or something, normally you'd be like waiting for mechanics, but we had a guy who actually worked on trucks that use the same engine as the MRAPs. And so he was just like, man. Oh, I know exactly what's wrong with this thing. Maybe I don't have the parts for it, but I know exactly what's wrong. He can go to the mechanics. You know what I mean? Like it just made it so much easier. Even if we were out on a mission or something and something happened to the trucks, he could like diagnose it and like call it in and be like, hey, bring this part and, you know, come fix it or whatever, you know, like, it was just so much better that way. But
that's one of the first things I found that I kind of picked up when I went over to the civil affairs side, was that the first things that they would do over there when you signed in was they grabbed you up and they're like, all right, what's your other skill sets? And they would kind of supplement you into a team where you helped out the others. And I mean, so many people take that for granted. I mean, that you bring up a great point right there. You know, you're better off as a team where you can supplement each other's skills.
Exactly.
And having that type of thing. I mean, we ran into it with what you were saying right there, a diesel mechanic thing, our generator. We had a big 50K at one point that, you know, it was, I think it was a Cummins 5.9 motor in there, actually. And, but nobody, you know, I mean, nobody else knew how to work on it other than this one dude who was a bit of a hick, you know, that shady tree mechanic.
Yeah. If you know, you don't learn this stuff in your training. The Army doesn't teach you this stuff, right? Like, unless you're trained as a mechanic, but, and then you like switch over to another, you know, MOS, but they don't teach you any of these kind of things. So it's just super awesome to have that diverse background of people, like you were saying. Like, there's people who, you know, they're great at pulling triggers, and then there's other people who have this other diverse skill set, and you bring all those people together, just makes the team so much better. And I think we had a great team out there. The people that we were with, you know, even things that, you know, we joke about, but even administrative things, we had that covered too with some of the people that we had. And it was like all the paperwork was squared away. All the
always know your boys in the S shop. Yeah, man.
Exactly. You have all that stuff squared away. It's good. Everything's good to go. But all right, let's get into your book. Damn the Valley is the name of the book. Tell us a little bit about kind of what led you to write the book. Where the title of the book came from. Tell us about the book, I guess, in general.
Yeah. I mean, really the whole thing, there's small snippets of things like prior and then after, you know, lessons learned and stuff, almost like an AAR, but really the book came about as the need for a historical record. There was another book that came out that touched on this particular deployment. And it didn't really sit well with a bunch of the guys, only because they noticed some inaccuracies. And there, it was more of a literary version. So, I mean, this one, it's an easy read. It's a quick read. I wrote it at a high school level. I know that some of these people coming back to me, you know, I've had a few of them, and I'll get messages like, man, I started your book at noon and I couldn't put it down. Like, I finished it that night, you know, and it's like, it makes me happy to hear that, just because I wanted something that was really for the guys, you know. And you have to think that your standard infantry guy, quite honestly, they come in, they don't, your enlisted side, they don't have the education and stuff. And then a lot of them, after they leave, it's kind of abysmal on how little actually use their GI Bill. Yeah. That was one of my biggest things. I mean, I went back and I finished business school. Start it over, but hey, you know, 2.5 years, nail it out, but like go back and finish business school. And then just started from there realizing that like your habits and disciplines that were instilled within the military gave you a lot more than some of these other peers that are out here in the collegiate group, like shoot for the moon, man. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's when I started hitting up the Ivy Leagues and getting stuff back. You know, hey, you know, I had something, you know, I just finished up with Columbia Business School with a program. But, you know, before that, I've been looking at Wharton for the MBA stuff, and they were all about it. COVID kind of messed with a bunch of those plans. But to have that sort of feedback and stuff, man, you guys are selling yourselves short. You know, like these type of frameworks that you have in the discipline, it sets you apart from a lot of the other students out there. And right time, right place, right uniform goes a long way in the civilian sector.
Well, I think to your point, you said, you know, a lot of times the guys, especially on the enlisted side, they maybe don't have the education. They maybe didn't have the best grades in school, high school. And they kind of just write off college and maybe in their mind. And they're just like, yeah, I know I have the GI Bill available to me, but you know, what am I going to do? I'm going to go there. I'm not going to do well because I didn't do well in high school. But they're different people when they get out. You know, they're a lot more disciplined than they were in high school. I know we screwed around and we probably got in some trouble and stuff like that too. But you know how to be disciplined. We all have that in us. We all can figure that out. And that's a big part of doing well in school.
Huge.
is being disciplined, saying, okay, yeah, I could go to that party or I could sit down and study. Like,
yeah. Oh, I had my, their college right now is really big on collaborative peer group type things.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like huge. They're starting to realize like a team is better than individuals, and you kind of have this built in accountability. And, you know, again, like we were talking about before we came on, about supplementing the team's skills. You know, that's one of the biggest things. And really, at one point, it was my final year to where I got so upset at some of these kids to where I was like, all right, that's it. Like, some of them, these guys don't even know what right looks like in some of them. So I just jumped in and was like, to the professor, I'm like, you know, can I say something prior to us doing the group assignments where everybody bundles up? Cause I know exactly what's going to happen. It's the same thing that happens every time and it's been going on. These people just gravitate towards their little cliques, you know? So she was like, okay, sure. You know, it's thinking, I don't know, maybe imparting old adage of wisdom or something to these kids. And yeah, you know, cause I'm at this point, man, oof. I'm that old guy in school, but I completely unexpected. I popped up and was like, hey, you know, you guys have seen me around school and stuff, but, who is, you know, you don't have to answer, but the guys that are tired of people not pulling their own weight on the team and falling behind on deadlines and where they end up pulling the weight, you know, and everybody else through, if you're tired of that, I'm going to have my own group over here. I'm not moving towards anybody else's group. You guys just come to me. All right, we'll figure it out. But I'm going to offer you a little bit of warning too. If you think that you're going to do that and skate by because some of these other guys are coming over here, there's an agreement and a pact that is going to be signed prior starting this. And if you fail, I will make sure you fail this class. I will go to the professor. And like at this point, she's looking like, ooh,
you know, what did I do?
What? Yeah, exactly. But so number one, I was like one of the quickest groups to fill up for one. And like, we always had our stuff in. The professor was like, man, your guys' stuff is in, like our final project. We actually had it in 2 weeks prior. We were like, what are your suggestions to the professor? And they were like, no one's ever done that before. Like, and we're like, well, we're done early. So like, let's figure out, like, we know what you're doing. You want to play the range, you know? And we ended up going on to finals within this particular one. It was like pitching an idea to a bank, a fintech firm and stuff. And we were one of the finalists, you know? It was just crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you get some motivated people together and you're going to get good results, right? And I think that's the same in just about any team, whether it's military or school or business or whatever the case may be. You get a motivated team together, you're going to get the right results. You're always going to find those slackers who just, they don't care, and they're going to skate by, and whatever grade they get. And you know, I don't know what their motivation is or lack of motivation, why they're not motivated, but it's like you're paying a lot of money to be here. Like,
I think maybe sometimes it's got to be that they just don't think of, you know, a lot of them, it's the parents that are paying them money.
Could be. Yeah.
You know, well, I mean, not one in particular, this guy is super smart in one of my marketing classes. And here I am on the GI Bill and I'm trying to figure out, you know, ways to survive. So I'm stacking, you know, Pell Grants and any scholarships I can get and stuff. And I'm just like, oh man, you know, it's whatever I can do. Maryland's, the cost of living out here is insane.
Yeah.
You know, and new kid, we had just moved out. I mean, there was just thing after thing. And I was just like, I had to hustle. And I found this one marketing scholarship that was open up and I go to him. I'm like, hey man, like, did you sign up for this? Like, I found it. You would be a shoo-in, you know, it's an extra $1,500 in your pocket. And he's like, oh yeah, I did see that. And I kid you not, the very next day, the dean of the marketing department comes in and personally hands him an envelope. Okay. Nobody else in class, just him, and walks out. And his grades are like phenomenal.
Okay.
So I go, he's on my team, and I'm like, hey man, like, so what was that? And he's like, hey, it's so crazy, man. It's an invitation to apply for that scholarship you were telling me about the other day. I'm like, dude, they're literally trying to give you $1,500. Just apply to it. It's like an essay on why you want it. Like, that's it.
That doesn't take too much work to just write a
minimal effort, effort. And
they obviously want to give it to him. Just do it. You know,
I know. Right. They're like handing this olive branch. And you know, when I got mine come back, you know, they were, I think I got like, cause it's on a scale. So I think I got 1,000 or something like that. And, I go to him and I'm like, hey, you know, I just got my that scholarship, but I'm curious, like, did you get yours through yet? And he's like, oh no, man, I never even applied. Like,
oh geez.
And I just, dude.
I had a feeling, like just a gut feeling that that's what you were going to say. Like the guy never applied.
Never.
But I was listening with like hopeful that that's not the way it went, but.
Right.
It's just a crazy. Different world. I don't know. So let's talk about this deployment, that this book is based on. I'm switching gears a little bit here.
I know. I kind of chased cool. a no, rabbit for a little bit.
No, that's okay. We went down that hole a little bit. We got out though. So let's talk about this. So the book is about this deployment to Afghanistan.
Yes.
Deployment didn't receive much media attention. The stuff that went on there, and you guys are there. You're fighting, and this place gets the nickname the meat grinder, right? Obviously, you don't get that kind of nickname when everything's going great and everyone comes out unscathed. So, tell us about this deployment. Tell us kind of what
the essence of the meat grinder.
Yeah, the essence of the meat grinder. I guess that's a good way to put it.
I mean, it was like, so you have to look at our deployment it was a little weird to begin with. You have a few different things in play to where we were actually originally slated for Iraq.
Okay.
So the entire time on the buildup, we're doing, I mean, hardcore CQB, you know, our ITC and JRTC cycles, it's all fighting, you know, it's all just, you know, your standard infantry stuff, but a lot of it is urban combat stuff. And we ended up coming down on executive orders, you know, because there was that surge into Kandahar back in 2009. So President Obama signed off on orders. We were the next ones out the door. So it just moved us from, you know, they just moved it. They were like, well, forget Iraq. You're going to Afghanistan. And we're like, oh, okay. I for one, was happy because they were starting to have that EFP problem out there.
Okay.
Where they were getting a huge uptick in EFPs. And that's something between that and that just door to door, you know, you come up to an urban sprawl and have to clear. Oh my God. I just forget that. Like, yes. I was like, thank God, Afghanistan. So we end up out here and we ended up getting pushed out to Helmand Province.
Okay.
So this is your typical, I mean, moon dust, wide open spaces, hot, dusty desert, Lawrence of Arabia type, you know, you're out there just salt all over your uniform because you're sweating yeah. out as fast as you can drink it. And we got into a rowdy gunfight out there. So, I mean, it wasn't like when you tell people like, yeah, we were in Helmand Province out of Lashkar Gah, they're like, you know, whoa. And they're like, no, man, like that primarily the Brits were getting they were getting their butts handed to them. And then you had Marja out there. And that's ultimately where our battalion commander was trying to push us. They were trying to get us into the Marja fight with the Marines. Well, the Marines didn't want us there. You know, well, you got a bunch of paratroopers and the Marines, you know, they have Ton Tavern and, you know, all their,
rah, yeah.
which I mean, I love the Marines, like honest to God, anyone that I've ever worked with in the Marines and stuff, they've been phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's a really good professional and stuff. But so the Brits wouldn't let us in either. I believe the exact words were, we don't want a bunch of paras mucking about on the battlefield, you know, which I can just hear it.
I can hear it. That's probably exactly how it was said too. Yeah.
yeah. And it's in his field boots and, you know, whatever.
Right.
So our battalion commander had been, General Stanley McChrystal's aide at one point. And yeah, so Lieutenant Colonel Genio, I mean, he goes to him and he's like, hey, I'm trying to get these guys into a fight, you know, where we trained up. This is what these guys want. They're a bunch of meat eaters. Like, what do you got for me? What's hopping out there? And he's like, oh, I got a spot for you. And, you know, out of Kandahar, we're going to be pushing into there. And that's how we ended up replacing 5th ID and the striker brigade that was out there. And if you look at Colonel Harry Tunnell, I believe the article is the ill-fated striker brigade. Those guys had already, I mean, it was already, the Argonaut River Valley was just, it beat you up. And if you ever try to take a vehicle, you know, to do a mounted patrol down through there, you have to look at the history of the Argendob. And if you actually go back to 87, when the Russians were in there, they lost like a battalion's force down in this valley. Like, wow. And it's surreal. Like there's like through that valley, there was heavy drop chutes like that people were using as like awnings and like, you know, old guys that are clearly old Mujahideen wearing Soviet officer belts and stuff. It's just the craziest place. But if you look at a modern day Striker, you know, it looks like a BMP. It looks like an updated BMP. So a lot of these guys just kind of looked and they're like, oh man, Russians are back. Time to hunker back in and, you know, let the bombs do their job.
I've seen this show before, right?
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, when we got there, they were already combat ineffective. The kids wow. that I had talked to, you know, off to the side at the talk and stuff, when we went in to go do our left seat, right seat patrols, they were scared. Like he kind of pulled me aside and I was like, man, we haven't been out of the wire in a while. And when we went down, you know, into the town for them to show us what we were looking at and kind of our area, it was clear. I mean, they were jumpy. There was, two guys digging in the riverbed and they called in Kiowas on them, you know, and just, and we're like, what was that? You know? And they're like, oh, they're putting in IEDs and like in a riverbed. Like, really? Like, okay. You know, it was just, yeah.
You've been here for a while. Okay. Maybe, you know, but.
Yeah, I know. Well, and it really ended up to where they were postured so hard. They were going in with counter guerrilla tactics. I mean, they had search and destroy painted on the side of their Strikers. Just that on how they went in with the wrong mentality and they weren't doing a coin fight. And the entire region ended up really hating them. And we had to change those stereotype that had been ingrained. They see the guy, same type of uniform, but the patch is different, but yeah. it takes time. And quite honestly, it takes bleeding in front of them for them to realize, you know, which is what happened. You know, I mean, you go down and you just start the first one we hit, you know, going from somewhere where Helmand province, we were untouchable to the first casualty we took on December 26th, day after Christmas, was Specialist Jason Johnston. You know, and that was an IED where I had actually stepped over the initiating charge just prior. It had already been cleared. But so they were the emplacement teams out there, they were good, like really good. Like the amount of metal that was in these things, they use these, if you've ever seen, they look like a hockey puck. All right. Okay. And it's a composite material, and the only amount of metal in it, it's just such a small amount of metal to be able to pick that up in the soil content that already has a lot of iron and different things in there is dang near impossible. So what they would do is they would constantly, you know, put these smaller initiator charges to larger charges, and that, you know,
triggered it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They had, so the charge for this particular incident, the main charge was up in the wall. And the, like along the footpath where you come in was the initiator, mm-hmm. and EOD came in and cleared, you know, and, I came in at the backside of Alpha team that went in and they're already starting to clear stuff out. And I'm, you know, I've got the long whip up and I've already sent in as we were going there, I already sent in where we were, but I'm getting onto the radio just to confirm, hey, we're bedding down, you know, we got guys going up on the roof and, you know, B team's coming in and boom, you know, they hit this thing and the shockwave, you see this thing just whoop, and wow. The dust like come over you, you know, and then just got onto it. Like it was a, hey, our last known position is where we're at. We just hit an IED. I don't know. We definitely have urgent surgical. I just don't know how many. I'm going to get back to you, spin them up. And they had already, you know, they initiated and stuff. And I had some EMT training on me as well. So the Lieutenant Vince Demarest that was there, you know, he took control of the radio anyway. And he's like, start rendering aid, man, like get on it, assist Doc. Mm-hmm. You know, Doc was so, man, that guy. So Doc Ponce was, no, he was a trooper. He was at the back end of the patrol and he caught shrapnel to the face, like a bunch of dirt and dust. He couldn't see. He was like kind of squinting, doing stuff blind, but the squad leader had also been thrown back on top of him as well during all this, you know? So, I mean, he's already limping around.
Right.
And, I mean, he was just on it, you know?
That's the thing with docs. They're not going to quit. You know, they see there's somebody else out there who's banged up, damaged, broken, whatever. They could be on their last leg and they're going to keep going until they can't keep going anymore.
They had to send us another one just because of like, he had that continence to where he felt the need to be on everything. And just with how, and I know, you know, on the RTO side too, they ended up bringing in, FO assets and stuff. And we, instead of having the both of us out there, we would rotate, just because the op tempo is so brutal. And the fact that the area was so saturated to where we ended up getting split apart into separate elements. So in platoon size elements.
Okay.
So that's where, yeah, it's a little bit different. And this is another reason why the book had to come from first platoon's side, because when you start looking at how many incidences happened out there, we ended up, quite honestly, we ended up, if you boil it down, we were 28 guys on a combat outpost in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. There was nobody coming down the roads to get us. The only way we got mail was by sling load. They would bring this thing in once a month, and that's, we would have two tri-walls come in, one full of water and one had, you know, supplies and mail, you know, and that was it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the good things about writing a book like this is we were talking about this, I think before we started recording, that the vast majority of people in this country have no idea of what actually goes on over there. I mean, you see, like I was saying before, you see on the nightly news, you see the green screen with the little dots on the screen and the little flashes that go across the screen and then they explode and there's all that kind of stuff. And people just get desensitized and think, oh, that's what war is. And it looks like freaking Call of Duty or whatever. Like it looks like a video game, but it's not. Like there's real people down there who are blowing up when those little flashes turn into big flashes. That's somebody blowing up. You know, that, and there's someone on the other end who's pulling the trigger that's causing that thing to fly across the screen. There's people on both ends. And neither one of them is an easy job to have, to be near that explosion. Obviously not being in the explosion, but and being on the other end, pulling that trigger. Like none of those are easy. And so people like you who've written these accounts down, I think it's important so that people can learn what the hell is actually happening when we send our men and women overseas to go fight in a war. I don't care what the cause of the war or what the justification for war is. This is what's happening, is the stuff that you've written about in this book. And having this first person account of these are the horrible things that we had to do, had to see, had to experience. I mean, without these things written down, like who knows about this stuff? And then, you know, the next time, you know, some thing kicks off, I don't want people to just be quick to go just send our troops over just to go fight another war. I want us to think about it. Like, is this worth it? Is this worth all the stuff that you just wrote in your book, stuff I've written in my book? Is it worth all of these things to have our men and women come back broken or maybe not at all? Is this something that we want? And trust me, I'm not anti-war at all. I know there's a time and a place for it, but we got to be smart about it, I think. And by knowing what actually happens over there, that's half the battle, I think. Just knowing how this is going to affect people and doing the right thing and getting you know, making the right decisions when we're deciding to send people over there.
Well, I know you said something right there about people being broken as opposed to, that's one of the things that there is that stigma out there of the broken mm-hmm. veteran. And quite honestly, I think it's more about how we frame it. And yeah, we do okay. kind of hear a lot of that society end of like a broken vet and this and that. And quite honestly, you know, maybe there are issues. And I know that like even through writing this was enough of an opportunity to slow down, to realize that there is, you know, some more PTS type issues mm-hmm. Here. That was one of the ends that I was really, that was interesting that came out. I've never had a problem talking about this stuff before, but when I really started delving down and it slowed down enough to where I'm writing it down and that disconnect, you know, it was sort of fused, you know, and then all of a sudden I've got tears coming down my face while I'm, you know, writing some of these chapters, but I yeah. know that the emotion flows into the chapter. So I'm like, you've got to keep going and face this stuff. So it was really therapeutic on that end of things, but so many people kind of feel that, you know, they might portray that broken veteran, but it's not, you've been forged is really mm-hmm. on how I look at it. You've been through some more that other people haven't seen and you're on the other side of it. Like what lessons did you learn from there? And maybe sometimes it's taking that tactical pause to sort of realize that, you know, the tools are there or the people and the support is there. You just need to slow down a bit more. You need to sure. take that breath, you know, don't let it stack up. And that's one of the biggest things that we found is when that stack just becomes, you have, it might just be that one last thing on there, maybe some money issues during the holidays, or, you know, maybe there's that bout of loneliness and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I know that, you know, guys feel cut off, and that's one of the biggest things too about communicating with one another. And that was another super rewarding side of doing this is getting in touch with some of these guys again. Mm-hmm. And that really, it wouldn't have been, and I talk about it later on in the chapters and stuff, that opportunity wouldn't even have been there if it wasn't for something known as Operation Resiliency. That was this was a peer-to-peer type therapeutic event to where they brought everybody from this particular company back to Charlotte, North Carolina. And I think this was in 2018. It was the pilot program for OPRES. And normally what you get for normal military reunions is maybe 20, 30 guys at max. Sure. We had 125.
Oh, wow. Like, yeah.
These guys came in from all over the place and it just ended up being something really special and getting that accountability with one another again mm-hmm. and reconnecting and stuff. And it kind of lit off the network. You know, and then again, with this book, bringing them together at the Airborne Museum down at Fayetteville for that event. You know, and some of the, man, those guys during writing this have just, they've gone so over and above with helping. Like one of the first things was pictures. The publisher wanted 30 pictures. I had nothing. I told the publisher, I'm like, yeah, we're good. I got this. And they responded in droves. I mean, they literally, I kid you not, within a month or two time, you know, had easily a gigabyte. Now there's just, I mean, it's massive, but also making that almost like a share drive for guys too. And they're mm-hmm. seeing this stuff up on social daily, you know, or even now to where the fact to where guys that were there before us, after us, involved in different units, they're noticing the mountain ranges and it's just so ingrained in. And they're like private messaging me like, dude, oh my God, I know. Like, so the Argonaut holds for a lot of people is just this place of, you know, good times and some absolutely terrible times. So, I mean, yeah. you've got both ends of the spectrum. And I mean, this whole through the book too, and I tried to keep it to where it's a little bit of a roller coaster ride, like it really is. Mm-hmm. And there is ups and downs. It's not all just that, you know, that brutal I mean, there's some chapters are pretty brutal, man. There's some of them are pretty hard, but it's real. And that's the difference. Yep. There is, it's just, I don't hold it back. I was a little worried, at first, and then really it was reading a Vietnam book, We Few by Nick Brockhausen. And he actually just wrote an endorsement on the book the other day, but it was kind of cool to get that, you know?
Yeah, sure.
You know, but I was reading this and I'm like, okay, this guy was obviously in it, but people are actually reading this stuff and they're okay with it. Like, okay. Like there's no more military historians out there on the battlefield. They've done away with that. Or at least there wasn't when we were there. That's for sure.
Right.
And to be able to put something together, you know, by triangulating it with the different guys that were there and like breaking it down into a historical record and something that you can actually, I mean, at this point now it's, you know, accepted in the Library of Congress. It's been DOD approved. The guys from the platoon have been through it. I've gotten stuff back from the majority of them, you know, hey, this is accurate. This is the best accurate picture. And, you know, that's what pushed harder for, we were talking before too, like entering in these other elements and pushing yourself to where, you know, the flag that's on the cover, that was the big thing, is down at the Special Operations Museum. The flag that's featured on the front cover is down there on display for everybody to see, along with a bunch of the other artifacts that guys carried on patrol in that valley. And like, that's, I don't have any control over that, but for them to step up and offer these like pictures of history in there, you know, it's, really, I really had a, you know, a duty at one point in this, and I felt that weight and burden of like, this needs to get pushed as far as you can possibly go.
Yeah.
On that end of things. And it's been so rewarding.
And I think there's two sides of things, right? Like, so there's your side that you're just talking about, like putting this historical record together, writing this book, getting it, you know, as accurate as possible, checking it with other people that you were with, and yep, we're good to go. This is accurate. Then there's the other side of like the consumer of this book. Who's going to read this book? And I think there needs to be the people who actually care enough to know about this stuff. There needs to be more of that. I think there needs to be those people out there who want to know, you know, about this historical record. And there certainly are those people out there. But there's some people, like we were talking about before, who are just blissfully ignorant of what's going on. And
yeah,
it's almost like they need a kick in the ass to say, like,
well, this tries to make like, it,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Well, this tries to make it a little bit more like, where normally you find these historical accounts and they're boring, they're dry, you know, they're written by a general that really wasn't there. You know, he's writing it from the accounts of people that were on the ground or from a battle drill assessment or battle damage assessment.
Let's be real. It's probably written like ghostwritten too. And it's not actually
most times
the general who was even there. Kind of,
yeah, you know? Most so, times, no, mostly yeah. you're absolutely right. Most times that's exactly how it is. I mean, even a lot of the soft books on the market, you know, which is just surprising, you know, it's like, come on, man, like if you're gonna do it, like dial it in and do it right. You know, which I mean, there's some other good books out there, but then when you kind of look and then you're like, okay, this isn't even, you can't count this as historical for one. There's not other, this is your end only. And it's even happened with some of those books to where it's been called out and been like, no, like that's okay. Just cause you know, you were in this unit and that left you with that check mark or that blue, verified tag, as they, everybody knows these days.
Yeah. Right.
Maybe not so much, you know? So this one, you know, when you get a platoon of guys together, man, I was nervous at the launch event because a bunch of them had flown in, but not so much because of the accuracy. I had shot this manuscript back and forth with them during the thing, and I compartmentalized it until the very end, you know, and then I put it out to the company and the battalion, like, hey, if you want a PDF, like I'll get it out there just to make sure on stuff. And a lot of guys, you know, came back and they're like, man, this is it, you know? And I had a ton of that feedback during and formulating it and everything, and really got some stories. This is like one of the best parts, is like getting those stories. Some of these guys aren't with us anymore. Mm. And it's really like keeping them alive, because nobody would hear. There's one in particular to where I can literally hear this particular sergeant's voice during it. It's, yeah, it's something special, you know, it's really something special. And to be able to put that down where nobody else knew about it, but then that somebody would shared it with me and opened up about it. And to do that, that really makes this something different. And it's really, I think more guys out there need to be, that's, I say it in the closing too, like we need to be working on more of this stuff together.
Yeah.
You know, and with how the world is these days and what we have for technology, I mean, we're talking, you know, we're hours difference, mm-hmm. you know, but it's real time talking to one another without any issue. Like, why aren't we holding workshops like this? You know, yeah. Or, you know, all this stuff is coming in good time. It's people that have to step up and do that. But I kind of call out to other veterans, like, hey man, like get involved within your veteran communities, with your guys, but even honestly, just your civilian ones too. They need that leadership that we've seen, you know, and we can offer, even if it is just like a basic thing, like, you know, running the soccer, you know, for the smaller kids and stuff, you know, the amateur soccer stuff, you're going to have more, side on the leadership end, you know, on that coaching end than a bunch of them will. You know, and quite honestly, some of those parents these days, you're going to be the only one stepping up.
Right. Yeah, that could be true. Yeah. Let's talk about, we talked a little bit about the deployment, and, you know, how it had its ups and downs. There's a lot of people, you know, it was challenging, right? A lot of people with
maybe 52% casualty rate. I mean, like, we're talking
life-changing injuries and
Yeah.
Exactly. You had a significant Purple Heart count in your unit, right? That was when I read about that, I was like, holy crap, this was real.
It was just glossed over, you know, right over.
And I didn't want to not mention that during this episode either. Like, there was a lot going on during that deployment. Yeah. So it's like, you know, nobody left there unscathed, you know, like,
no,
whether they physically were injured or not, they saw it. They had to, you know, help those people, and that does impact you, you know. So nobody left 100% the same that they came in, and I think that's true for a lot of deployments, but in this case, this is especially true, I think. How did you and the other guys that you were with, how do you guys kind of cope with that aftermath after coming back home? And, you know, what kind of support systems were in place for you guys?
So a lot of that stuff, and that was, man, the first mass formation back at the company, you know, it was clearly apparent. There was they started firing off a cannon at Bragg. Okay. And nobody had told us about this.
Oh gosh.
Nobody. And we're back, first day back, mass formation in the morning for PT, and boom. And it was in the distance still, but the entire formation, like standing, like all of us flinch, every single one, even the first sergeant at the front. And he just kind of did this like little giggle and was like, oh, PTS much, like, you know,
yeah, right. But
for real. Like, I mean, they had, I honestly, because of, I had received orders, halfway through the deployment. And it was actually for 5th ID, the striker guys that we had replaced. And I was like, there's no way I'm going over there. Not a chance. And since I had always planned on going the Special Forces route, I went across and did selection. And quite honestly, after what we had just been through, it wasn't all that bad.
Perspective there, right?
Yeah. So my end, I didn't get a lot of the support on that end just because I just kept running. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until a lot later on that I actually went, you know, and started seeing somebody at Womack there on post, you know, and they kind of, once I started unpackaging it, they were like, oh, what? But I mean, they had guys that they brought out to us over there. You know, I think it was after Staff Sergeant Brunkhorst's death that they flew in this psychologist, this female psychologist. And, you know, she was just surprised with how, the conditions and how, just like, whoa. The fight out there was totally different, where we'd hear a gunfight across the river and we would like ache to go and do that, as opposed to the psychological effects of having to walk through minefields all day.
Right.
And, you know, the support, VA's come a long way in it, but really, I mean, a lot of this stuff just got kind of pushed to the side, you know?
Yeah. I mean, for sure. I mean, I know, you know, years ago, the support that was available was, I mean, virtually non-existent. You know, it's definitely come a long way. I mean, but it's got a long way to go, I think, too.
For sure.
And I'm not trying to put down anyone who works for the VA or anything like that. I think the folks that I've interacted with anyways, they're great people. I'm sure, like, anywhere you're going to get your bad apple. But, you know, everybody I've worked with, even just the people who call, like, scheduling appointments, they're pleasant and they're awesome people. You know, it's like,
okay, so there we went. No,
I mean, no, you know, honestly, like sometimes you deal with certain people and they just have this, I don't give a shit attitude about their job. And
no, yeah, it's not the case.
It's not that anymore. Yeah. You know, like, we don't have that issue.
I've found that in the VA is usually the frontline workers and stuff, you know, they're phenomenal. I've had amazing care there. You know, I've had a surgery there that was like, they were like, oh, you trusted the VA with that? I'm like, dude, they were better than the civilian, what I've seen on the civilian side, quite honestly.
Yeah.
But it tends to be at the top, you know, that bureaucracy and like that paperwork end. Cause like, there's another one. I mean, I've been on the last 8 months on the schedule for something else. And I'm like starting to rattle the cages and say, hey guys, like, what in the heck is going on?
Yeah. And that is true. And I think on the lower front line, I don't want to say lower, that sounds degrading. I don't mean that these people are like, you know, the bottom of the barrel trash or anything like that. That's not what I'm talking about.
No, they're the front line workers there. They're the ones that are, seeing the people when they come in the door.
A lot of times those people are veterans themselves. And, you know, like if I was a veteran sitting there behind the desk, like at a VA facility, and you walked in and you're like, I need help with something, like, I'm going to move mountains to make sure that you get the support that you need.
Yeah.
You know, damn the bureaucracy. I don't really care about that stuff. Paperwork and the people, you know, off in their offices someplace else. I don't really care. I'm going to figure out how am I going to get you in to get the care that you need. And that's, I think is a good thing. We have a lot of that going on. But there's definitely some improvements that could be made, you know, in there. So, you know, I'm sure we'll cover that in another episode sometime.
Totally. That's literally like, so 5 years ago, I wrote another book, crazy enough. I just never published it. It was something that I bounced off with some of the guys. And so, and it was just really a lot of frameworks that, hey, this is what worked for me, or, hey, this is what you could be using within your own transition experience out of, you know, the military to the civilian side.
Yeah.
Things that I've found have worked. And I put a lot of this down just because, I mean, when I left the military, my last 8 months, I went back to the 82nd. And there was an instance to where there's a specialist and he's sitting on staff duty. But, you know, it wasn't like your typical, I'm like, man, you're gone in 2 weeks. Like, what's going on, man? Like, you just seemed really bummed, like really bummed. Something was off. And no big deal. Like, I'm like, dude, look, man, just come back to my office. Nobody's back there. We'll just hang out for a little bit. Nobody's in the freaking building. I can't remember what we were doing, but it was just us both. And he just breaks down and is like, I got busted down in rank. They're separating me early. Like, I don't know what to do. I haven't done anything to clear. I don't know where I'm going. And quite honestly, I'm getting ready to kill myself. And I just looked at him and I was like, look, man, I hear you and you haven't spoken to anybody. So, I mean, I know this is serious. I'm like, but like, what do you want? What's your goal? You know, nobody's talking to you out here, but I give a shit. I care about you. Like, what's going on? And he's like, I just don't see the way forward. And I'm like, well, if I try to get you the help that you need, will you at least go through the steps and, you know, just take that next step? Mm-hmm. And he agreed, you know, and so I put in the call for a sergeant and, man, that guy, wrong answer. He literally gets back to me and he's like, get him out of here. Freaking, he's a problem. Get him out of here as quickly as you possibly can. And I was like, dude. So I go back to the kid and I'm like, hey man, come with me. We're going to see Sergeant Major. And, yeah. That's what I had to do. You know, I mean, they hated me for it and I got assigned this kid, you know, for the next few weeks and they thought I wasn't going to be able, you know, they were like, they're going to hang it on me. But, you know, not only did I get him out the door, but the help he needed as well, like they were tracking and stuff. We had him seeing somebody constantly and they like got him actually seeing somebody and like getting the counseling and stuff he needed. But on top of it, he had no idea that he was also owed like another $75,000 from the military for the contract and moving forward. And like, this is just stuff to where he had no idea. And it just took someone taking that minute and like, all right, calm down. Like, let's look at everything in front of us. Let's look at the options, what we have here. Yeah. And, you know, somebody saved. Thank God. Thank God that, you know, but it's like, know your guys and know the people around you and just talk to one another, you know? Well,
and like in your case, notice changes in people's behaviors, right?
Yes.
You see someone who's sitting there and they're looking like just a shell of a person. You might want to talk to that person. Like something's not right. Like that's not a normal way to be, you know, behaving or whatever. So, you know, maybe it's not a cry for help necessarily, but it's a red flag. You can definitely see that there's something going on. There's something wrong. Let's investigate. Let's peel back that onion and figure out what's going on with this person. And, you know, in your case, thank God you were there and you were the one who recognized this person was hurting or struggling or something was going on. You didn't know exactly what was going on, but you talked to him and, you know,
know your guys, know the people around you, know your team. That's one of the larger things that, and I know that it's starting to shift back, you know, they are starting to put an emphasis on this thing, thankfully. Cause at one point, like as I was leaving, like I asked the team leaders and squad leaders and so like, you know, what do your guys do? Who do they hang out with? Do they hang out together? Are they always with one another? You know, it was mainly like, oh no, they just kind of separate and go back to their own barracks rooms. And I'm like, and do what? I don't know. Yeah. Well, wrong answer, man. Like you should know. Like, those are your guys.
I had another guest on not too long ago who was talking about how the barracks rooms, you know, where you have a room where you can go to, you can close the door and you can be by yourself.
Yeah.
Might be part of the problem that we're dealing with where, you know, in the past there was these open bay barracks, everybody's together all the time. And I mean, yeah, it's nice to have a little privacy every once in a while, but, you know, when you
want unit cohesion and stuff, you bring them out to the field for like a month or something. Yeah. I mean, that's literally, and you learn things about each other and you put them in those pressure cooker situations, but you get guys to start talking and realizing their similarities and their differences and where they can interact with one another. No, you're right there. That interaction has disappeared at some point.
Yeah.
And maybe it's either more field time type stuff, which takes more funding, you know, and more uncomfortable moments.
Right.
For sure. But, you know, this is it. It is a unit for a reason. I mean, the very word unit, cohesion. And
unity, you know, you bring everyone together and you learn stuff about each other. I mean, even just as simple as basic training, you know, you're in these open bay barracks and there's going to be people who butt heads, and that's going to be in any group of people.
A
random group of people, you're going to get people who butt heads. It's going to happen, but
been there.
And sometimes those people who butt heads, they're yelling, they're screaming at each other. Eventually, they figure out, hey, you know what? That person's not that different from me. I mean, yeah, we have some differences. We maybe different opinions or, you know, whatever the case may be. But they actually, sometimes they turn out to be great friends afterwards.
It's usually those commonalities is why you're butting heads is because you do things the same way.
yeah. You know, it's crazy. But I think all of this is just maybe a wake up call. Maybe we need to rethink how we are, you know, maybe even structuring some of the units, maybe how we do some of the training, doing more of that, like you said, more field time, or just things to get people together. I know one of the experiences in the unit that I deployed with that brought us so close together happened when we were out in the field. And it was just a simple, it was supposed to be a very simple exercise. Just some kind of more off-road driving, getting some of the younger guys trained up on driving.
I know where this is going.
We got the truck stuck in the mud. Yep. We were down at Fort Polk in Louisiana, and it was wet, muddy. We got the truck stuck in the mud. We were only supposed to be out for, maybe an hour or so. We left around dinner time that night. I don't know, probably maybe an hour or so we're supposed to be out. Didn't get back until about lunchtime the next day. We came so close together, like afterwards, because we all had this shared suck experience where we were cold, we were wet, we were muddy. We had mud up to like our hips on our pants. Like it was deep.
That's the good stuff.
But I mean, I'll remember that experience till the day I die.
Exactly. And that's the same thing. Like all this stuff, like in there, people, there's been somebody who said, especially that, the December 26th incident, and they'd say, you know, I am so sorry that happened to you. And I literally go to them. I'm like, I'm actually glad that happened to me because it gave me a different perspective on things.
Yeah.
Not happy that it happened, but, you know, happy that it happened to me in the way of like, it was a lesson.
That life lesson that you end up with, right? And that you hear that kind of message from people who, like, for example, they're battling cancer or, you know, some other life threatening kind of illness or disease or whatever, and they're like, honestly, it was the best thing that ever happened to me. It changed my perspective on life, changed all this stuff in me, and fortunately they beat the disease, whatever the thing might be, but they turn out and they're like, my whole perspective on life is a complete 180 to what it was before. And, I wouldn't trade it for anything. And it's just crazy when you haven't experienced something like that, you're like this thing must have messed this person up more than they think it did because it's like, whoa, but then you really start to think about it and it's like, you know, I kind of get it. Like sometimes you got to go through some of these hard life altering experiences to see the light, if you will, to get that.
No, there is a whole thing with today's men in society not having the traditional trials and stuff that they used to have. Like, I mean, you look at anything going from any sort of tribe type societies or civilization, it's usually that young man leaves for his trial and comes back after it either stronger or not at all kind of thing.
Right.
And I know it's a little bit of a like either stoic or, you know, but like these things they help build you.
Yeah.
It's not something to be broken over or, you know, you got to realize there is a way out or there is a way forward. It might be really rough night right now, but like you just don't see the next step and you need to take a pause. Take that breath, maybe reach out to one of your friends that's also been in a tight spot with you. You'd be surprised. Again, like one of those other things that was started during COVID was a peer-to-peer thing over Zoom.
Yeah.
And it was put in a format to where it was the guys getting together, but they would share stuff. You know, they really would. Like, hey, is anybody going through anything? And because it was these guys from back then, they would. And more times than not, it was like, oh, hey, man, I've been through that before. Like, let me give you some options that might work for you. And just knowing that, even that, hey, you got somebody behind you that has your back on that, and that group is really, you're accountable to that group. In the way, whether you like it or not, you know, you might not realize it, but you are, you know, in the back of your head, it says, hey man, like, when's the next meeting? Or, hey, you're going to have some news to give to them in that next meeting or something, or even just the guy you're talking to on the side that had experience with it. You know, hey, I really want to bring something back to him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's not, when you say accountable, you know, some people might get that, that thing like, that's, oh my God, I have to do this, like a homework assignment. Like it's due, it's not that, you know, it's like, hey, this guy reached out to help me. I don't want to let him down.
Someone gives a shit about me
and I don't want to let that person down. I want to beat this thing, whatever it is. I want to get through whatever this obstacle is. I want to get over it. That other person is in my corner, you know, kind of like you think about like a boxing match or something. You got that guy in the corner holding the bucket and all that, you get that image in your head. It's like, I don't want to let that guy down. Like he's sitting there holding my spit bucket. You know, he's going through the suck too. And I don't want to let that guy down. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to give it my all, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, again, like that's, again, stuff with this book, even, you know, you just keep pushing, you know, and it's like, there have been times when it's been like, man, like, why am I doing this? And then you just remember, you're like, no, that is why you're doing it. Like, stop freaking being sorry for yourself about that.
Yep.
And what's the way forward, you know? And like, okay,
right,
let's
go. Yeah.
It's been good. It really has been.
For the listeners out there who are, you know, interested in this book and they want to find out, you know, more about the deployment, more about your story and the folks that you serve with, what do you hope that they can take away from this book when they read it?
I mean, there's a few different missions on that end. That was, you know, what the original intent was for the guys that were there to be able to have something to put on, you know, their bookshelf and hand to their kid one day. And really, you know, it's kind of evolved into anybody out there with a combat experience. So, I mean, really either helping them understand that other guys have been through this stuff and, you know, they're okay, or they're at least moving towards being okay.
Sure.
And then also for those that, you know, are trying to understand it. There's one in particular that, I sent him a copy early. Cause, you know, some of his family members, he can't talk about it with them. He doesn't have that type of rapport. And I'm like, dude, just hand them this, you know, give this over to them. So, I mean, it's for that crowd too, but it's also for very possibly we're at a time right now to where the world is a very uncertain place right now. And right now, I mean, kids do have a choice on that. And I'm not trying to dissuade anybody from military service. Quite honestly, people are like, would you do it again? I'm like, yeah, I actually felt like I was right where I needed to be when I was in the Valley at that time. And it gave me some of the best lessons that, you know, I'll ever learn, but for them to at least know what they're getting themselves into.
Yeah, that's right. And I think reading stuff like your book, you know, other books that are similar to that, I think that can help give them that kind of insight to what they're getting into. I know some people who've joined the military, never had anyone in their family or anyone that they knew ever in the military. And they for some reason decided that they're going to join. They were jumping in the deep end blind. They had no idea what they were getting themselves into.
And, oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, do it.
Well, even just the, like, you know, like I was saying as well too, is the guys that are in, you know, there's a lot of guys right now that, we have a bunch of people in our military that don't have, you know, they don't have a CIB or a combat, you know, like they haven't seen combat yet.
Yeah.
And that was, the Airborne and Special Operations Museum actually opened up on the 9th. We did a private event and I got to meet the new generation of kids within 1st Platoon Bravo Company. And man, I mean, it was just such a surreal experience. But 10 minutes in, you know, I gave a, was like, all right, you know, I got about 10 minutes before these guys start getting the bobbin head kind of thing. So I talked at him for like 10 minutes, you know, but then I called up. I was like, all right, you know, where's first platoon's RTO? You know, they all kind of, all the guys pushed him up there, you know,
sure.
And I come up here, you know, and I had written an inscription in the book that I handed over to him. And I was like, I need for you to do, like, this is a nasty burden I'm about to put on you, but you need to read this differently because you're in the position I was in, you know, when I wrote this, and you very well might face this type of stuff. And he did, he took it very seriously. And like afterwards, it was just crazy to see that some of the things that the new generation does differently, because after everything, I went into a Q&A, you know, he sat back down and we had a, you know, a really good Q&A session and stuff. They started, I was just like, let me hear from you guys. What do you want to know about? But afterwards the RTO kind of pulled me aside and he was like, hey, do you have any other advice? You know, something you said in here clicked. And we had a little bit of a talk on, like, you know, passing some of this mantle of generation. It was particularly, doing cards and stuff and having a 9-line written up, you know, pre-done, because when that hits the fan, you know, you're not thinking that way. And it's a good to have a guide in front of you. And it's just some simple stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, but you could see that his mind, he was already working on these solutions and stuff. And I'm like, man, this new generation is just so, they are hungry for it and they're thinking about it differently. And it was really good to see that. It was really good to see that. So there is hope.
Yeah. There is hope. There is hope. That's good. I mean, you know, you see a lot of negativity in the news and all this kind of stuff in society and everything. And
we have good people that step up to the challenge. We really do.
That's the important message, is we still do have good people here. And they're willing to, you know, like you said, step up to the challenge and do the work that needs to be done. So there's hope for the future. I'm glad about that. Where can people go to get a copy of this book?
Well, yeah, I mean, you could get it at any of the major retailers. I mean, you got Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookshop.org, you know, your independents and stuff. Sure. I have all those links on damnthevalleybook.com. So okay. You can get shot out to like wherever you need to be. It's almost like a link tree. There's also author copies on there. And I know it doesn't help my Amazon numbers, but what I've been trying to do is, I know, right? Yeah. It's all, everybody these days is all about that. But I guess if you don't put the message out there, you don't get the story. But
right.
On there, for any of the author signed ones on there, for every two that I sell, I can get one copy out to the guys that were there. So, I mean, my goal is to get, you know, 150 copies out to these guys. And we're getting there. We're doing pretty good so far.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I will have a link to that in the show notes for everybody to, you know, take a look at, get a copy of the book wherever they prefer to buy a copy.
Review it.
And, you know, go to Amazon, buy it, get the reviews, help boost the stats there.
Right.
You got the algorithm that you got to deal with over there.
It's crazy. You got to play. It's crazy. The games you have to play for that, but
you can't just write a book anymore. Like you have to become like a marketing expert to figure out how to navigate Amazon and all this other shit. That you know.
Well, that's funny. Cause I mean, that's what I went to school for, but no, the book is written, you know, from that perspective. I didn't do any of the tricky stuff in there, but it's definitely helped along the way. Like this whole, that's what I went to school for real was marketing. I didn't go to be a journalist or a writer. This was just something that, you know, the call came and, you know, I answered it and here we go. It's been getting some really good feedback, which I mean, I'm happy about that, but I'm really happy most about hearing back from the guys.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think the best reviews that you can get is from the guys who are there and, you know, knowing that it's resonated with them, in a positive way, that I think that's a great thing. When things go sideways, will you be prepared? Some people are concerned they might have to go for a long time without electricity or even food. That's why I want to introduce you to 4patriots.com. Get preparedness products you can use now and that could save your life later. My favorite is 4patriots new solar generator, the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. It uses the endless free power of the sun to power lights, your TV, medical equipment, even run your fridge. Plus, it's expandable and comes with a free solar panel. Or pick up one of Fort Patriot's best-selling survival food kits. Delicious tasting and designed to last for 25 years. They even have kits with real meat, and if the power's out, no worries. Just boil water over a fire, simmer, and serve. You'll enjoy a hot meal and stay safe in a crisis. More smart people than ever are finding Fort Patriots. Over 2 million customers trust them, and you might have even seen them on TV. I had the folks at Fort Patriots set up a special page for you at fortpatriots.com/drive-on so that listeners of this podcast can see this week's discounts and deals before they go away. Go to fortpatriots.com/drive-on, but hurry, these deals won't last long. Save more and get peace of mind now by going to fortpatriots.com/drive-on. So before we wrap this episode up, I want to do a segment I call, Is It Service Connected? And for the viewers who aren't familiar with it, maybe you're not familiar with it either, Is It Service Connected? It's sort of like America's Funniest Home Videos, a military edition where we take a look at a video of a service member doing something stupid. And we try to predict whether or not whatever happened in the video would qualify as a service-connected disability somewhere down the line.
Awesome.
So it's always a good time. I love doing it with other veterans because we always get a good laugh out of these videos. To me, it's one of the most fun things.
I'm wondering now if you picked out a parachute-specific one.
You know, I didn't. And
there's
I'm thinking
so many
about it
good
now.
Ones.
I know there are so many. And I'm thinking about it now. Like, as I was about to pull this up, I was like, I am such an idiot. I should have grabbed the something parachute related.
I am literally like, I know you're going to bring up what you bring up, but there's this one out there with this guy who like comes flying in, but he must have caught like a crosswind or had to pop a reserve or something. He goes like flying down right onto someone's balcony.
That's funny.
Hilarious.
I saw another one the other day, and there's this guy, he's coming down, everyone's coming down, there's this big open field, beautiful landing area, like no obstacles in the way except for there's this one tractor sitting off on the side, and this one guy comes in and he nails the tractor, the only obstacle in the entire field.
This guy
nails it, and he's on top of the tractor, like is where he hits,
man,
and he down on the ground. I don't know if he got injured or not, but it was funny.
Slip away, baby.
I gotta find that one again. Maybe that'll be the next one I pull up here for.
Nice.
But I'm gonna get this thing shared up here with you.
See what we got.
You can take a look at it, and we can both laugh at this guy who.
Canal crossing.
Yeah, it looks like a little canal. I'm going to kind of describe this for the audio listeners who maybe can't watch this right now, but if you want to check it out, go to YouTube, go to Twitter, wherever you want to go, where we have this video, you'll be able to watch the video and you can laugh along with us. But the video, it looks like it's a canal crossing, and I don't know about you, but I'm looking at this. It looks like a pole or a pipe of some sort. It looks pretty flimsy.
Probably has a little grease on it, you know. But
grease.
Yeah,
no. Probably it's never been cleaned ever. Who knows what's flowing under it in that canal, may rise up and cover that thing. So it's not going to be an easy time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be an easy time crossing this thing. So let's play this video and see what happens here. So I'm going to hit play here, and all right. So he's a little timid going across. I think you got to be a little quicker. Yeah. I mean,
he didn't commit.
His face planted into the other side. Then he's like straight. Oh man, he face planted into the other side of the canal.
Bam.
And then he like backflipped into the water. He's covered. He's covered. Head to toe in that. I'm being generous maybe by calling it water. Who knows what the hell is floating through there? Probably whatever diseases he ended up with. Inevitably, after getting out of that might be service connected, right?
Better see Doc about them doxycycline tablets.
Yeah, you're gonna want to bump up the dosage on that.
Definitely
change your socks. That is some advice I think Doc would probably give you. Definitely do that. Your feet are gonna be crawling with grossness, and you don't want
all that funk.
I'm kind of looking like I was kind of looking at the other side. It didn't look like anyone else was on the other side of that canal. So this was probably like, hey, private, go check this out. See if we can make it, you know? And they clearly couldn't. So there's someone else scouting how to get across this canal.
You got to be careful, though. I mean, it looked like he was wearing full kit. You hear about guys going under. And I mean, we actually had one in particular that actually happened to. You know, but he just, I mean,
it didn't look like that.
It'll drag you down.
Yeah, it wasn't that super deep. Like his feet were still like up above the water, I think, when he fell in. But you're right. Like, you might do something stupid like this and not realize how deep it is. Like, we were in Afghanistan and the monsoons came through and flooded this area. And there was this group of nomadic people. They happened to be in this area temporarily, and the rains came in, flooded this area, and they had cows that were on this little island in this middle of this flooded area. And they came to us to see if we can help rescue their cows. And I'm like, first off, I'm not sending any of my guys out across this water that's flowing right now.
Yeah.
Especially in full kit. Because I'm not having them take that shit off either outside the wire. Because who knows, is this an ambush that they're setting up? You don't know what's going on. But we went out and we're like, sorry about your cows, man, but we're in no position to help you right now. Like,
yeah, nothing you can do.
At that point, I wasn't going out there. I wasn't going to send any of my guys out there. And I wasn't going to drive any of the trucks out and hope that it didn't get away. You know, like, how else were we going to help them? You know, so I don't know what they were expecting us to do, like fly a helicopter in and scoop them up. But like, I'm not doing that either. So.
I know, right? This is not Operation Dumbo Drop, guys. Like,
no, exactly. We're here to fight a war, not save cows. I don't know. Maybe that would have won the hearts and minds of that group of people, but I don't know. They didn't attack us. I guess we're okay. I guess I understood, like, there's not really much we could do, but
yeah, it was a long shot on their end too.
It was just hope and a prayer, I guess. But anyways, thank you so much again for taking the time to join us, sharing your story. Again, for the listeners, Damn the Valley is the book. Go get a copy. The link will be in the show notes, and go to Barnes & Noble, go to, you know, any of the local bookstores around you, or go to Amazon, get a copy of the book. But thank you again so much for taking the time to join us, sharing your story. I really do appreciate it.
No, it's been great. Thank you for having me on. It's been great.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.